Hey, welcome to the Wednesday podcast. We've got a great one for you. We start the podcast with how America is really split in two, the cities and then everywhere else, and how we don't understand in the land of everywhere else, even things like avocado toast. We kind of boil it down to what we need to choose. It is, as Reagan said in 1964, a time of choosing. But what is that choice now? Also, we look at Stu's numbers, his power rankings, which are quite different in some ways than just the poll numbers, Stu.
Yeah, I mean, we try to look at more factors than just polls. Polls are a part of the package for sure. But, you know, the earlier you are in an election season, the less they actually matter. It's about bigger things, you know, campaign infrastructure and all this other stuff that we look at and come up with final rankings.
And I will tell you that his rankings are different than the poll numbers, and I think he's right on it. And he also will predict on today's podcast who the candidate is of significance that will be the first to drop out, and I think he's right on that. You don't want to miss it. Today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Two hundred and 43 years. You know, in 2026, we're going to have our 250th birthday. I remember what it was like in 1976. Now it's our 250th birthday. And for 243 years, we have been the hope for freedom. We have been the place that people who feel oppressed have come, and we have welcomed them. They've come here because they know their system doesn't work. They know the system that they've been living under has oppressed them, has stopped them from pursuing their own happiness. And now that promise is fading. We may not make it to our 250th birthday. America is a melting pot. Now, what does that mean? We don't talk about that anymore. That all these people have come together from different places, with different backgrounds and different languages and cultures and traditions. And they come here because they want to be a part of it, not the place, the idea. And they melt into each other. They don't lose their distinctiveness because we're all equal, but we're all different. For society to survive, it has to come to that understanding that we are all equal, yet we are all different. As I was driving to Idaho with my son over the weekend, I drove from Texas, and the first thing I learned was, geez, Texas just doesn't end. It was a full day of driving just to get out of Texas. And even Texas is different. Dallas is different than Amarillo. And New Mexico is different than Colorado. And Boulder is different than some of the small towns along the way. We're all different. And what's happened is many people don't understand the people in the cities. They don't understand. And I know this to be true because I have here in my house, I have these three lights. And I bought them in Dallas, and they were expensive in Dallas. But they're all beat up old lights. And I was hanging them in my kitchen. And the guy from town that helps on the ranch, he came in and he said, You're putting those where? And I said, I'm putting them in the kitchen. Aren't they great? And he said, uh-huh. And I said, why? He said, were those, how much do you pay for those? And I told him, and he said, huh, you know, we could have just gone to one of the dairy farms and pulled those out of the barn. I swear to you, it was a revelation to me that we could make a lot of money. Come on, guys, let's get together. Let's go out to the farms and just say, hey, what's the old crap? We'll give you brand new lights. What's the old crap that the people in the cities are going to want? And why do they want it? Why do you want it? You want it because you want something that feels authentic. Feels authentic. May not be authentic. I've never been to Dick's Bar and Grill in Florida or in Cancun, but I can damn well bet you I can buy a t-shirt that says that and one that looks like I've worn it for years. We want something authentic. We want something, we want to show that we've lived. What we want is we want the simple life without actually having to do all the work that is required for the simple life. So the cities don't understand the people who go to church, the people who milk cows every day. They haven't had to help a neighbor. They don't understand why we'll park the old tractor or the old truck behind or beside the barn. They don't understand that. Why don't they clean that up? They don't understand that we're actually very happy, positive people in our own lives. But then again, remember, those people who live out in the country do not understand avocado toast. We don't get it. What are you doing? How is this suddenly popular? I swear to you, you want to cripple California? Ban avocados. They'll go crazy. We're headed for something, and I don't know what it is. But as I was driving the country, I realized there's no way these people are going to give up their guns. And there's no way these people in the cities understand that idea. The reason why we're headed for something is because we no longer have a center. There is no center anymore. What was our center, really? I want you to think about this. Our center used to be summed up in the phrase, truth, justice, and the American way. And people started making fun of that. Now, think of this. Who started making fun of that? It's the same people who are leading us down this road today. And what did they first come for? With a tip of the hat to Niemöller, first they came for the American way. And I didn't say anything because, I don't know, who cares? But we no longer know what the American way even means anymore. What did the American way mean? Never perfect, but always striving. Never giving up. Helping your neighbor. Being good to one another. Trying to be better. Never perfect. Sometimes not even close to perfect. But learning from the lessons of the past and trying to be better. That's really what the American way was. But they took that away. Let's just focus on truth and justice. Really? What came next? What truth? What is truth? Whose truth? There is no truth. And now we're here at a place where there is no truth. You can't say that there's only two genders. How dare you? There is an unlimited number of genders. I could be a purple-feathered chicken right now if I decide to be, and that's my truth. So we got rid of the American way. We got rid of truth, and now we're quickly getting rid of justice. Justice doesn't exist. Blind justice? The idea behind justice is don't look at who I am. Don't look at I'm white, I'm black. Don't look at my wealth or my poverty. Look at the facts. judge me by the content of my character and the facts of the case. If blind justice is truly blind, there has to be many times that a judge will say, I don't want to rule this way. I don't want to. Doesn't make me happy. I think you're a perfectly wonderful guy. But here's what happened. You screwed up, dude. You screwed up. Over and over, you've screwed up. I don't know what's going to stop you. But until you figure that out, I've got to keep you off the streets. But now we're ruling on feelings. Justice without any rules. Justice without any jury. Justice without a trial. Justice without even a hearing. That's not justice. We play by the rules. And they change the game. We play by the rules, and they say, well, you didn't violate any of those rules, but we have this feeling that you're upsetting the community. A feeling? Yeah, it just doesn't feel good what you're doing. Well, can I just get the name of the people I need to make feel good then? Because if you're not going to judge by the rules, I need some measuring stick. Give me the names of the people I need to make feel good. Now that seems really wrong, but at least it would be something. Do we dare ask who needs to feel good? Because the guidelines, the rules, the language changes all the time, we can't have a conversation. I was listening to The Daily, the New York Times, this morning, and they've done a series on Europe. And I swear to you, it is fun just to listen to. You have to listen to it because they're shocked at what they find. People in Italy, they didn't like all these migrants just showing up in the middle of the night. And now I feel like we're surrounded by these people. Oh, racism is alive. No, say the Italians. We just wanted to know who they are, where they came from. Are they interested in being Italian? Because we feel like we're losing our way of life. Oh, says the New York Times. So they're cloaking their racism. Oh, dear God. It's hysterical. If it wasn't so tragically sad and so tragically obviously leading to another war in Europe, it would be amazing. It would be amazing. It would be a comedy show. But we can't talk about it because they don't understand it. They don't have any interest in understanding it. They think that they're smarter than all of us because they don't keep an old truck next to their barn. They don't have a barn. And if they did, they would surely just get rid of it. Right now, the media will not even admit that there's a problem on our border that doesn't start with Donald and end with Trump. They won't talk about any of it, let alone the radicals and the communists who are now masquerading as democratic socialists, as if that's any better, who are actually planning, facilitating, and funding groups from all over the world to storm our border. Did you know that just a few weeks ago, a large group of men from the Congo spoke neither English nor Spanish, suddenly got over here from the Congo, went to Mexico, and somehow or another were smuggled into our country and now are living on the streets in San Antonio. They speak French. San Antonio government is saying, does anybody speak French? Because we have to understand these guys. They only spoke French, and somehow or another, from the Congo, they got there. Now, just so you know, the Congo is the number one spot in the world. It's a hot spot for Ebola. Now, completely unrelated, ISIS recently was in the Congo recruiting or doing something in the Congo. We don't know what. They're just working on a new project. I'm sure it's going to be great. Now, God forbid, a truly sinister group like ISIS decided to weaponize people and Ebola, while we sit here and still fail to recognize that there's even a problem on the border. That's a real possibility. Nobody seems to care. Nobody wants to talk about it. We can't talk about it. Yesterday, they banned live action. Live action is Lila Rose's group on for pro-life. They banned her on Pinterest. On Pinterest. Pinterest now says, can't talk about abortion here. Oh, but I could share any kind of picture I want. Just not pictures of babies that haven't been born yet. How'd that happen? How is David Duke and Richard Spencer still on YouTube if they really care about their community? And meanwhile, here we sit in an election year, and we have Joe Biden ripping off Evanetti's slogan. Now, you remember who he is. He's the discredited attorney that everyone on the left loved because he was representing a porn star. But I want you to hear Mr. Plagiarism himself, Joe Biden, use the same slogan that Avenatti did. Listen.
I think it's time to, he says, let's make America great again. Let's make America America again.
Let's make America America again. Who's America? What America? Was America even ever America? Was America great at some time? How dare you say that, Joe Biden? No one even knows what that is anymore. Let's make America America again. What is America? The America that I knew growing up died sometime in 2002. Those who were born on September 11th, 2001 are now in college and ready to vote for the first time. They don't know what America was. They don't know what America is. That promise is long gone. We've replaced equal justice with social justice. We have abolished truth. And God only knows what the American way is. But America is not a place. America is an idea. And this is what should give us hope. America, the idea. Never finished, never perfect, but always striving.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
I think it's time to, he says, let's make America great again. Let's make America America again.
Yeah. Like anybody knows what that means anymore. What does that mean anymore? To make America America again doesn't require a new president, a different president. It doesn't require a single new law. It doesn't require a dime of new spending. No new programs nor socialism is going to make America America again. You don't even have to vote this way or that way. Here's what making America America again requires. That you begin to believe and understand and find self-evident that all men are created equal. And they have a right, a group of rights, that nobody can take away. And they have a right to live the way they wish, follow God or not follow God, raise their children by the dictates of their conscience and their spirit. They get to keep the fruits of their own labor. They live by the document that provides for the common defense. That's all you have to do is live by this document that provides for the common defense, promotes, not provides general welfare, but promotes general welfare and domestic tranquility, establishes justice, not social justice, blind justice. All we have to do is start protecting our rights as human beings, all of our rights, not the guy that we like and forget about the guy we don't like, all of our rights. And you know, not even one group, when they have control and they have power, and then the opposite group, when the opposite group has power, that doesn't promote the general welfare. It doesn't promote domestic tranquility. It's in the belief of the idea of America. And this is a pretty grand idea. Nobody had ever tried it before. And no one, including us, has ever perfected it. Nobody's ever reached it. So should we just give up? Because this is what we have to say to ourselves. I give up. We cannot do that. The country that put a man on the moon has to say, that's a bridge too far. We can't live and self-govern ourselves. We can't live side by side with people we disagree with. That's a bridge too far. We can't do it. Now let's stop and lower our goals. See, it's always a race to the bottom. It's always a race to the bottom. Our founders said, let's reach beyond what we are now. What we're being taught is to reach lower. Forget about that idea that all men are created equal, and each one of them have unchangeable rights, and that they can govern themselves through a document that explains exactly what the government can and cannot ever do. That's our hope. That's our answer. Quite honestly, that's our war. That's our World War II. It's our duty. And for the sake of our children, it's not only our duty, but it should be our sacred honor as well. All right. Pat Gray joins us now from the Pat Gray Radio Roundup, which is heard on The Blaze and also on iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Glenn. Let's make America America again. Can we do that? Let's do that by starting with a socialized medicine program and a constitutional right to continue the slaughter of children. That's what America's all about. That's what we're trying to create here. That's what our founders wanted. I hate it when he gets into that whisper voice. Oh, that drives me out of my mind. Although, I love the exchange yesterday. You know, a couple years ago, we started talking about this. Wouldn't it be fun to see a Donald Trump-Joe Biden matchup in the general election? Did we not predict how fun that was going to be?
It would be fun.
Yesterday, we got a little taste of how fun that's going to be. We're a year and a half away from the general election. And already in one day, President Trump called Biden a dummy, a loser, and mentally weak. You know, bless his heart. I love it. I mean, I shouldn't. I know that's bad of me. I'm probably a bad person, but I loved it. I can't imagine Ronald Reagan saying, well, you know, that Joe Biden is a dummy. This is the only person in the world who is president of the United States would call somebody a
dummy.
Now,
it's only fun if Joe Biden swipes back with something just as ridiculously unpresidential.
Yes, and well, we have some of that. Here's a little exchange back and forth yesterday.
Tonight, a split-screen moment and a possible preview of the general election.
You know, he says, let's make America great again. Let's make America America again.
Sleepy Joe.
Beautiful.
He's a sleepy guy.
Former Vice President Joe Biden courting voters in the country's first caucus state, looking past his more than 20 Democratic opponents and setting his sights squarely on the current commander-in-chief.
I believe that the president is literally an existential threat to America.
Okay, today, the president taking shots just before leaving on his own trip to Iowa, a state he won in 2016.
When a man has to mention my name 76 times in a speech, that means he's in trouble.
Are you elevating Joe Biden by continually attacking him?
No, I'd rather run against, I think, Biden than anybody. I think he's the weakest mentally. And I like running against people that are weak mentally.
Oh, I love this.
That's just some fun.
I love
right
this.
There. Isn't
you
that
know,
great?
I think Biden, I think he's got something with the sleepy. It's going to turn into
yeah,
something.
Yeah, he does.
Because Biden, yeah. Biden is making Donald Trump look like he's 20 years old.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And Biden is kind of taking advantage of the fact that Trump is taking advantage of the fact that Biden is so old, even though he's only 4 years younger. And but I think it's working. I think it's working.
It is because he is. And I've never noticed this before about Joe. But I think, you know, when you start to slip, it can go fast. And I think he's mm-hmm. starting to be like, well, you remember when Ronald Reagan first got into office, he wasn't like that.
Yeah.
By the time he got out of office, you could see the toll it had taken, and his mm-hmm. age had started to kick in. And it wasn't that he was senile; it was just that it was a little uncomfortable at times. He'd go, and then he would have a great line, but you could see that he was aging. Joe Biden is, to me, looks like he's just starting to fall apart.
I think too. I mean, Biden has always done this quiet voice thing. No matter how much energy he's had, it's always mm-hmm. been like one of his shticks where he'll just get really quiet as if he's saying something really profound when it's really not much of anything.
Yeah.
And I think he's doing
May I just interject that nothing is ever profound when it's followed by man.
Right. That is the what it's an that's his plain talking sort of
shtick. It's middle class Joe. Yeah. He's middle class people use the word man
right.
all the time.
And he thinks that if he says it,
he's middle class like if he just stepped out of the Scooby-Doo mystery van. And he's like 1972 middle class, man.
But it's he's doing it more, I think, because he wants to contrast himself. He wants to see everybody in that race is trying to show themselves as this, with the exception of maybe Sanders, is trying to show themselves as this super balanced, calm intellectual because they think you know, it just is a good contrast with Trump. And where Biden, I think, probably his strength is to be more like Trump, right? Like he's the type of person that will come out and he can maybe throw some insults at you. And he does that stuff a lot. He's supposed to be the likable guy, right? I don't know that he is, but that's supposed to be his shtick. And he's trying to do this other weird dramatic thing. And you're right. So far, I don't think it's working at all.
And how dare you, when you're part of the team that started the fundamental transformation of the United States of America, how dare you say we're going to make America America again? You're the ones, you're part of the team that started tearing that apart.
Yeah. I mean, there's a new story out today that Biden is saying that Trump wants to rewrite the limits of the presidency. Who are you? You just spent 8 years doing that.
Uh-huh.
Joe Biden is going to tell, he's going to lecture us on too much presidential power. Are you kidding me? And then he also said he was going to cure cancer, which is, I mean, if he gets elected.
That's a bizarre one, isn't it?
Yeah. If he gets elected, Joe Biden is we're going to cure cancer. That's going to be the big takeaway of his presidency.
Really?
Which I would say
that's a good promise.
Yeah. We used to do that as a joke. Remember, we would run fake candidates like Ernie Velveeta and Harold Flimlaski,
yes.
and they would all promise to cure cancer. Now Joe Biden's really doing it.
I mean, it's like they'll never, Donald Trump will never build that wall. I don't know. That's pretty simple compared to curing cancer. I think he can get that one done. I'm not so sure. Joe Biden. And what is Joe? He's got a like new chemistry set he's going to set up on the Resolute desk. Shh, quiet. I'm close. I just have to pour this beaker into this other beaker.
Right. It's like basically what it is. I mean, we really did. I want to say, we have to go back and find this now. One of those guys, whether it was Harold Flimlaski or Ernie Velveeta, said if you elect him, he will cure cancer, but he won't tell you how until you elect him, which was his big strategy. I think Biden's
and that's
trying
why
to
it hasn't
say,
been cured yet.
We need to start doing that. That he's gonna Joe Biden is gonna cure cancer. He's already cured it, really. You just have to elect him before he'll tell you how he's going to cure it. That's fantastic.
We used to
That's
joke fantastic. About it. He's now doing speeches. This is the front runner in the race.
Jeez.
Is doing speeches about if you elect him, he'll cure cancer. That's a real thing happening right now. That's amazing.
Do you think does he have some information from scientists that they're a year away?
But that wouldn't have anything to do with him being elected. Scientists are like, I'm not working unless Biden wins. Like, that's not a thing scientists do, to my knowledge.
I don't think so.
I think he's probably saying, I'm going to dump a bunch of money into the research, right? I guess that's what he's promising.
Maybe.
That's what actors say they're going to do. I'm not working unless you change this law. Mm-hmm. I mean, are actors and scientists any different? I mean, I certainly hope so, but I'm not so sure. I'm not so sure.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hi, it's Glenn. If you're a subscriber to the podcast, can you do us a favor and rate us on iTunes? If you're not a subscriber, become one today and listen on your own time. You can subscribe on iTunes. Thanks.
So the one thing I really like about Stu, and there is only one, is that he's a stat geek. He's a guy who is really numbers minded and can always tell you everything about every poll and which polls to dismiss and which ones not to dismiss. And he's usually right. He was pretty close on the election last time, if I'm not mistaken. This time he has really put about a year's worth of work into developing a system that takes into consideration 30 different metrics. Can you go through any of those, Stu, so we understand?
Sure. Like, I mean, you think everything from polling. We use even some prediction market stuff. We go through endorsements and the organization the campaigns are building, the debates, the media coverage, fundraising. I mean, really, it's a few dozen, and they actually grow. We change the formula as it goes on. So, for example, now polling is going to be less important than a lot of these that indicate potential, right? Potential is going to be more important now than a week before an election when, the polling is going to take into account all of those things. There's a lot of these candidates that people don't even know. So you have to, there's a little bit of art inside of there. But overall, it's a good way of like looking at the entire field and seeing who's going up, who's going down, who, over a long period of time, you can kind of follow the race and make sense out of it because it's freaking chaotic. I mean, there's 24 people in here. And how do you even understand the entire field?
So I'm not really interested in the 24 people. I'm interested in the ones that actually have a chance.
Mm-hmm.
So can you tell me, give me the ones that are really the movers and shakers?
Okay, a few things from this one, which I thought were pretty interesting. One was the biggest drop of any candidate since we started doing this. And you may instinctively know that was Beto O'Rourke, fell 7.4 points. The way we do this is all this giant formula basically spits out a number 0 to 100. So 100 would be, in theory, the perfect candidate that couldn't lose. 0 would be the worst candidate. He is still kind of still in the top tier of the race. I mean, people look at O'Rourke and say this guy's failed. However, he's still beating about 18 candidates in polls. A lot of these candidates, I think it's 17 candidates are at 0 or 1% of the 24. So to your point, like, you're right. A lot of these guys really seem to have no chance to act.
Well, de Blasio says he's just getting started.
He is.
He's at zero, but he's just getting started.
He should start just getting finished. Right now, he is just getting started. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there are examples of this. For example, I mean, Pete Buttigieg is one who was at 0 and 1% for months and now is not. These things do change over time. Elizabeth Warren looked done at one point during this campaign, and she's another big story in this. She had a big rise, and she's having a little bit of a moment. I mean, she's polling better and better, and her approach seems to oddly be working with people, which is essentially going out and churning out a new policy proposal every week or so that's going to get the government involved in another aspect of your life.
I want to get into this possibly at the bottom of the hour, that she seems to have an answer for everything. Now, not cancer.
No.
Joe Biden is the answer for cancer. Literally. Play that audio just in case you missed it. It's amazing.
I promise you, if I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes America is we're going to cure cancer.
That's incredible. Incredible. So she doesn't have that answer, but she does seem to have an answer for everything else.
That is her. That's her shtick, and it's what people really want. We can get into her a little bit more, but I mean, she was the biggest riser in the entire, this edition of the power rankings that we do, and we rank them all from 1 to 24, and it just takes too long because there's two dozen freaking people, and you have to find something interesting about all of them. That's not easy. Buttigieg is another guy who I find really interesting here, in that, like, I kind of thought, the bump had kind of faded a little bit. And I think that's somewhat true. You see in the polling that Buttigieg has sort of fallen back. He had a really good poll in Iowa this week, which that was before, or this was after we did all these calculations. But that, you know, that's where he's focused most of his attention. It's where he's polling best. Obviously, if anyone who wins Iowa is a real factor in the race, sort of automatically. So the fact that he's right in there, you know, this is Biden's probably weakest early state. You know, Sanders does okay there. Warren does pretty well there, and so does Buttigieg. Yeah,
but
right
what does
now.
That mean? I mean, if Biden loses, it'll mean something. But if he's 5, 8, 10 points ahead, it's not going to mean anything. The number two will mean something because the media doesn't. I don't think the media really wants Joe Biden to win. The chances of anybody else beating a 10-point lead coming out of Iowa.
Well, I mean, we have to step back here, though. It's very early. We haven't had one debate yet. If you, right. I mean, Joe Biden yesterday came out and promised that if he was elected, he would cure cancer. We all realize that Joe Biden is going to have 20 to 30 complete foot-in-mouth, you know, face-to-rake sort of moments in this campaign. The idea that he's going to win by 20 points, I mean, it's possible he's winning.
I love the fact that with Joe Biden, it should be rake to face. But with Joe Biden, he's so incompetent, it's face to rake.
That's a good point. The rake is still laying on the ground. He just falls down and smashes his face into it.
Yeah. It's just like the rake is just like, I got to hit that guy.
Right.
I got to hit that guy.
It's fascinating. I mean, because look, it would be ridiculous to say that Biden is not only the leader in this race, but really in a tier by himself. I mean, you cannot even put Sanders in his tier right now. I mean, Biden, absolutely, this is his race to lose, but he's really good at losing races. I mean, he's done this in his entire career. He's run for president like 107 times, and he's won approximately zero times.
Right,
so,
but, you know, look. 108th is the charm.
Yeah. I will say this, though, for Biden. Number one, he is running a different campaign than almost everybody else in this race. Yes, he's hanging back from the cameras, which is obviously smart considering he's a gaffe machine. But in addition to that, he is one of the only candidates in the race and the only one I can think of that's above, you know, 8th or 10th in this race that is not folding to the sort of hardcore socialist messaging. You know, he's a guy who's come out and said, I'm not giving everybody free college. We're going to have free community college. We don't really want Medicare for all. That's not going to work. You know what? We want abortion to be progressive, but the Hyde Amendment should stay. These are things. He's the only one doing it, and there's a reason why he's winning with a field that is not entirely socialist. The Democratic voter, the average person living in Iowa, the average person living, in these states that is going to vote for a Democrat is not Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And every other right. candidate is trying to be her. He seems to be the only one who's recognized that there's a day after the first primary. There's a day after you win. You have to go up against Donald Trump and try to win voters from the Midwest who don't want Medicare for all, who don't want socialism.
So there's a difference here, too. A similarity and a difference with 2016. In 2016, you had the same thing. Donald Trump was not towing the line of the traditional Republican.
Right.
He was not saying all those things. He said, I'm, you know, now it's, he just answers to anybody who is. No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He carved his own path, and he held that. But he is his own man. I'm not sure Biden is his own man. Maybe he is. I'm not sure he'll hold this path for very long, at least after an election, if he became president of the United States. So he is sensing that these parties are not reflective of America as a whole because it leaves out the independent. And I think there's a lot of people in America that are tired of the hard line, the hard party line, because they don't see the parties as doing anything.
Yeah.
And so if somebody is an independent thinker or appears to be an independent thinker, Americans, I think, are attracted by that.
I totally agree. And that it's really important to point out, Joe Biden is not a moderate. Not at all. He was one of the most he was either him or Obama was the number one most liberal senator when Obama ran for president. I believe it was Biden 1 and Obama 2 as the most progressive senator. The guy is no moderate, but he's messaging it that way, which is smart because no one's addressing those people.
But he's not a revolutionary.
No.
See, I think that's the difference now. We have Ocasio-Cortez and all of these people who are truly revolutionaries. And they want to burn the whole system down. That's not Joe Biden. He wants to carve out a nice little comfortable place for him and his cronies in the world that has already been created. He's the kind of guy, he's the kind of progressive that never delivers to the left. You know what I mean?
Not enough, even though like Obama even. He passed, biggest massive expansions of government we've probably ever seen in my lifetime, yet he's still seen as a disappointment somehow to progressives. I think that's true. I mean, Sanders, I think, is a real revolutionary, right? Like that, he has lived this. I mean, a guy who went to the Soviet Union on his honeymoon, famously. This guy is someone who is a real revolutionary. I think to some extent, Warren really is too. There's a lot of them that are playing the role, and I don't know how revolutionary they are. But Biden is, I think you're right, a Democrat, a far left Democrat, a guy who represented the state of Delaware, remember, for all of those years. This is not a guy who, he likes to say he was from, Pennsylvania, and he likes to kind of portray those Midwest values. That's not what this guy ran on. And the only reason people get confused with Biden and they think, well, maybe he's sort of moderate, is because he's old. He was taking liberal positions in 1978 that seem conservative today because the country has massively moved to the left. And so they go back and they're like, well, you said this in 1980. Well, in 1980, it was like basically socialism, what he was recommending.
Right.
Right. And so he's constantly been on the progressive edge this entire time. And if he becomes president, he will be at least Obama. And who knows, may go even further, but he will be a very liberal president that will try to change things up. He might not be Sanders, he might not be Warren, but he's going to be, don't let him fool you. There's this idea that, and there's several candidates that are attempting this in the race, which is moderation with a wink, right? Like basically they're saying, I'm a moderate, wink, wink. Hey, Democrats, I want you to know I'm not a moderate. And, that is something that Biden is attempting. There's a bunch of candidates at the bottom of the field who are attempting it as well unsuccessfully. But that's largely because Biden so far has been successful. You have to imagine there's some lane for people who want a normal Biden sort of Democrat here as they see it. And that lane is not going to be taken by Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders.
This is the Glenn Beck Program. We're looking at the power rankings that Stu puts out once a week. Stu, what is the... where are the strengths and the weaknesses of Biden?
Biden, look, is the name recognition is very, very high. I mean, as much as we talk about how there's so much power with the socialists out there, people really, generally speaking, remember Biden fondly as Democrats. Again, I'm not talking about him going up against Donald Trump. This is just a Democratic contest. And people like him. I mean, he's got a favorability rating of 77%. 77 to 15 is his favorable in the Democrats.
In the Democratic Party.
So that's a nice thing to run on. I mean, Bernie Sanders has a high one as well. Of course, every Democratic candidate, with the exception of Bill de Blasio, is viewed relatively fairly. Bill de Blasio has the worst approval ratings in the entire field, and he just got into the field. Like,
and you just said the whole field is rated fairly. I think they're rating him fairly too.
Oh yeah, that's true. It's not well, I would say. You look at certain candidates on here, and a couple that I would highlight would be Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg, who have still massive gaps in their familiarity. I mean, like about a third of Democrats have never heard the name Pete Buttigieg before. I mean, that is like, we talk about this stuff every day. So to us, this guy's been, invading our lives for several months. But I mean, he is basically, as far as candidates go, pretty unknown. I mean, he's in the area of, Julian Castro as far as name recognition. And he performs much better than Castro does as far as favorability.
When I was in music radio, I used to pick the music for radio. And... I remember I'd look at research, and you would look at the familiarity. And there was a tipping point But if you had a song that was very, very popular and people loved it, but it was unknown to the mass, you had a pretty good shot that once it was exposed, it was going to it would take off. Mm-hmm. So that's the thing with Buttigieg. Once people know who he is, if his numbers, what are his likes and hates and really, really love kind of numbers? Do you look into that at all, Stu?
Yeah, that's part of this. You know, he's at 42-11 right now. One important thing to understand, though, is basically every candidate in this race has about 10% of people who will say they don't like them. And it goes up from there. Like, you know, Bernie Sanders is almost 20. But, you know, Buttigieg is at that floor, basically. It's at 11%. And he has 42%, so a 4-to-1 ratio. Plus, he has a third of the audience that has not even heard of him yet. So if he can continue those sorts of ratios, he's in a really nice position. And that's the thing about Buttigieg and why he performs so well on the power rankings is because he's got tons of room to grow.
Right. And if he has deep passion, not people who are like, oh, I like that Pete guy, but deep passion and that much room to grow, he is a real contender.
Yeah, I think the thing, his big concern, I would say, just watching him as a candidate, is he needs to, he's one of these people, and there's a few in this race. I would say Cory Booker's kind of in this position. I would say Chris Cuomo on CNN is this type of person who thinks they're a lot smarter than everyone else on Earth. And he definitely shows that from time to time. He thinks an awful lot of himself, and it comes through in his speeches.
That will hurt him. Mm-hmm. That will sink him.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.